So today I'd like us to focus on the image of Jacob's ladder. And this image can be found in Genesis chapter 28, verses 10 to 12. And what we find there is Jacob traveling to Laban's house to acquire a wife. Now Laban is Jacob's uncle on his mother's side. So the backstory is interesting in that he was sent there by his father Isaac, who was persuaded by Rebekah, his wife and the mother of Jacob, that it would be better for Jacob to marry one of their own rather than marry a Canaanite from the surrounding district. However, there was a more pressing reason to get Jacob away from the family home, which had to do with the fact that Rebekah and Jacob were complicit in deceiving Isaac, so that Isaac would bestow on Jacob the birthright belonging to his older twin brother, Esau. Now, Rebekah, aware of Esau's anger toward his brother, feared for Jacob's life, so she worked on Isaac and persuaded him to send Jacob to Laban to acquire a wife for himself. And so we come to the point in the story where Jacob takes rest for the night on his way to Laban, and where we are told that Jacob dreams a dream. So reading Genesis 28, 10 to 12, we have the following. And forth is faring Jacob from Beersheba, and going toward Haran. And coming is he upon a place, and is lodging there, for the sun has set. And taking is he one of the stones of that place, and is placing it for his pillow, and lying down is he in that place, and dreaming is he, and behold, a ladder way set up earthward with its head touching the heavens. And behold, angels of God are ascending and descending on it. We also come across a reference to this ladder upon which the angels of God are ascending and descending in the Gospel of John, where Jesus has the following exchange with Nathanael. Jesus perceived Nathanael coming toward him, and is saying concerning him, "Lo, truly an Israelite, in whom there is no guile." Nathanael is saying to him, "Whence do you know me?" And Jesus answered and said to him, "Before Philip summons you, when you were under the fig tree, I perceived you." Nathanael answered and is saying to him, "Rabbi, thou art the Son of God. Thou art the King of Israel." Jesus answered and said to him, "Seeing that I said to you that I perceived you underneath the fig tree, are you believing? Greater things than these should you be seeing." And he is saying to him, "Verily, verily, I am saying to you, henceforth you shall see heaven opened up and the angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man." That's John 1, 47 to 51. The general idea to get hold of here is that there is this ladder that connects what is called heaven with what is called earth, and that it allows for the ascending and descending movement of what are called angels. So, what this image presents us with is an image of an unfolding psychological or spiritual process. So, what this image presents us with is an image of an unfolding psychological or spiritual process. For this is what dreams concern themselves with, and that Jacob's dream illustrates a connection between different levels of the mind. The levels of mind are presented in a relationship of heaven to earth. Heaven, of course, is above and earth is below. So psychologically, heaven represents what is of a higher or finer quality of mind and life, while earth refers to what is of a lower or coarser quality of mind and life. These terms refer to two different modes of consciousness. Another way of thinking about this idea of higher and lower is to think in terms of what is interior and exterior. Things of an interior nature have to do with the interior aspects of our mental life or spirit. These are things concerned with eternal reality, such as the well-being of our soul, while those of an exterior nature have to do with temporal things or those things of our mental life that are more focused on the well-being of our body and life in the external world. When we start out on the journey to wholeness, our level of consciousness is basically confined to the lower or earth level of being. In this stage of development, our mental life revolves around a sense of self that is completely immersed in what the physical senses offer as a picture of reality. In this sense of self, we find our identity within a psychological matrix that is centered on the belief that how things appear to the senses is how things actually are. At its core is the belief that the feeling of life we sense within ourselves is something intrinsic to us. In other words, we believe that we have life in ourselves. Now, the power of this feeling is so convincing, so pervasive, that it is impossible for us to separate our identity or sense of self from it. This is the basis of the love of self. We love the sense of self as ourself, so much so that anything that calls its legitimacy as ourself into question is fiercely resisted. Now, it needs to be pointed out here, in case it's not obvious, that everything that flows into our mind from the Lord and heaven calls the legitimacy of this belief into question. So, to the degree that our identity is woven into this earth-born self, then to that degree we will be in a state of life that is opposed to and resistant of what is from the Lord. Consider the following from the work Divine Providence, where Swedenborg testifies, saying, "I have been fully convinced that nothing I will and think is from myself, but that it only appears as from myself. And it has also been granted to me to will and love this." That's Divine Providence 158. Then in Divine Providence 176, it states, "Everything a man wills, thinks, speaks and does should appear to him to be from himself. For without that appearance, no man would have anything of his own. He would have no proprium. In a word, he would not be a man." So divine revelation teaches that this feeling that we have life in ourselves is actually an appearance, and that contrary to how we experience the feeling of life in willing and thinking from ourselves, our life is something that flows into us from the one and only life and source, namely the Lord. I don't know how this idea that everything you experience as your mental life is not actually from you sits, but I'd hazard a guess that everything in that self we identify with, taken from our external life, finds it offensive, whether we are conscious of that or not. Until we see the truth of this, not just intellectually, but emotionally, we will remain in the belief that we have life in ourself regardless of what we profess we believe with our lips. You see, what we profess to believe and what our responses to life reveal to be the beliefs we actually hold and live from don't necessarily align. But everyone can, with a little reflection, see what the difference might be for them. Until this is seen, we essentially hold that our self is life itself, and because this belief is opposed to the truth of how things actually are, that the Lord alone is life, it can only produce what is evil and false. People often take issue with the idea that the word states that human beings, as to their proprium or sense of self, are nothing but evil and falsity. But what else can a sense of self formed around what is diametrically opposed to the good and truth of the Lord's inflowing life be but evil and false? The idea that this sense of self is infernal isn't a personal judgment we need to get defensive about. It's just a statement of fact that needs to be accepted. Once accepted, the possibility to be reborn or regenerated moves that much closer, because we move from a belief that is opposed to the essential nature of the life flowing in to one that is aligned with it. This first sense of self we come into as a form of life is opposed to what real life is. It is actually what is meant in the word by those who are dead in the following. Then another of his disciples said to him, "Lord, let me first go and bury my father." But Jesus said to him, "Follow me, and let the dead bury their own dead." It's found in Matthew 8, 21 to 22. What is meant by the dead can be seen in the work The Apocalypse Explained, number 694. Where it states that death, when spoken of man, means a lack of ability to understand truth and perceive good. And this defect exists when the internal spiritual man has not been formed. For this is formed by means of truths from good. In this internal man resides the faculty of understanding truth and of perceiving good. For this man is in heaven, and in the light thereof, and he who is in the light of heaven is a living man. But when the natural man only has been formed, and not at the same time the spiritual, then there is no faculty of understanding and perceiving the truths and goods of heaven and of the church, because such a man has no light from heaven. For this reason, such a man is called dead. The key idea to hold on to here is that the terms dead and living from a spiritual perspective hang solely on the ability to understand truth and perceive what is good. A natural man or mind that is formed apart from a spiritual mind is said to be dead, which really means dead to what is good and true. The implications of this are significant, for it means that there is nothing in an unregenerate mind in and of itself that can lift the sense of self out of the evil and falsity that forms the matrix of its identity. Something of a different quality and order altogether is needed if the sense of self is to be extracted from the hellish prison of its identification with evil and falsity, born of the loves of self and the world as its life. That something is divine revelation from out of heaven, or ideas of a higher order, what is called the Word of God, or the Logos. This is that which comes down from heaven, and so can enter back into heaven, taking with it all that are willing to receive it as the basis for a new sense of self. This is why salvation is not possible apart from divine revelation and the reception of truths from the Word. These truths shine their light into the psychological darkness of every mind whose sense of self is steeped in evil and falsity, opening the way for a new sense of self, a new mind to be conceived and born. This is what it means to be born again. The formation of a spiritual mind or a spiritual man can only take place through the integration of the Word into life, through the practice of its truths as the basis for self-examination and repentance. It is the practice of the word that is the good that gives rise to the truths that constitute the spiritual man or mind. It involves the transfer of the sense of self out of the loves of self in the world and into love of the Lord and one's neighbor. The Gospels clearly teach that the sense of self formed of the earth must die before a new sense of self formed in the natural from the spiritual can be born. And as was stated from the work The Apocalypse Revealed, this new mind or man is formed by means of truths from good. That is, truths born out of the practice of the word. It can be seen that psychologically or spiritually speaking, there is a very practical aspect to this often vaguely understood idea of what it means to be born again or to be born from above. So let's circle back now to the idea that our sense of self exists within a psychological matrix. Being psychological in nature, we can think of this matrix as an organized mental structure or an organic form through which we experience being conscious or have the experience of possessing a sense of self. It is composed of every affection, every thought, every belief, value, delight, every memory, every experience, and all the associations we make in relation to all this being drawn together and organized into a form receptive of life. As life inflows into this form, it animates it into an expression of the image and likeness of the core love that sits at its center. So whatever makes up the center sets the pattern for everything else organized around it. The implication of this is that the center governs the form of the whole, so that the form of the whole reinforces and supports the center. This is captured in the statement from the small work Brief Exposition of the Doctrine of the New Jerusalem, and it's in paragraph number 40, and it reads as follows. For the inmost constitutes the very essence of the sequences, and the essence as a soul forms them into a body after its own image. It then goes on to say, and then when in its descent it lights upon truths, it infects them also with its own blemish and error. So long as the belief of having life in oneself holds sway at the core of our sense of self, then even if there are truths present in the natural mind, they are organized in a way that supports this false belief, and so the mind remains in a disordered state. It needs to be understood that this belief is so fundamental to the sense of self we have acquired from believing the appearances of the senses to be real, that nothing feels more true or more right to us, so much so that anything that challenges it is viewed with deep suspicion. When speaking of the unregenerate natural or carnal mind, Paul in his letter to the Romans, that's Romans 8, verse 7, states that the carnal mind is hostile to God, for it will not submit to the law of God, nor is it able to do so. In the Arcana Celestia, number 5650, this resistant state of the natural mind to the very spiritual laws that make up the inflowing life of the Lord is described as follows. The natural man, apart from the spiritual man, loves his concupiscences because he loves himself and the world. Hence he becomes anxious when thinking about having to give these up, and supposes that if these were got rid of, he would have no life left, for he invests everything in the natural or external man. When the natural man, being left to himself, is in this state, he draws back and resists. We see then that the default state of the natural that our sense of self is invested in prior to being awakened to spiritual life is hostile towards the Lord and so those things belonging to heavenly and spiritual life. That is what is good and true. The sense of self or proprium can produce nothing but evil and falsity, because everything it produces flows forth from loving above all else the feeling that it has life in itself as something intrinsic to itself. This love and the belief that flows forth from it amounts to a belief that one is divine. It can't avoid falling into this belief, despite how much it might deny it. To claim to have life in oneself is to attribute what is divine to oneself, and thus to deny the Lord, who is the only life. The structure of the mind that forms around this love can only be in form an image of hell. In fact, in the Arcana Celestia number 1064, subsection 3, it states that everyone in hell wishes to be a god. So to be in hell is to be in the belief that the feeling of being a self is real and not an appearance granted by the Lord, who is the only self. Clearly, what is a form of hell can't receive what is heavenly into itself. If our sense of self is a form receptive of hell, then if we are to receive what is heavenly, a new form of mind is needed. To be able to receive heaven requires a new sense of self that is in the form of heaven. To enter into the experience of heaven is only possible if our sense of self, and so our mind, has been formed from what is of heaven, and so is receptive of what is heavenly. If our sense of self is opposed to what is good and true, then the only experience open to us in that state or to that form of mind is what's produced through receiving the opposite of what makes heaven, namely what is evil and false. This sense of self is referred to in the following from the work The Arcana Celestia by the term own. I'm reading Arcana Celestia number 150, and it states this. The state of man when in his own, or when he supposes that he lives from himself, is compared to deep sleep, and indeed by the ancients was called deep sleep. And in the word it is said of such that they have poured out upon them the spirit of deep sleep, Isaiah 29 verse 10, and that they sleep asleep, Jeremiah 51 57, that man's own is in itself dead, and that no one has any life from himself, has been shown so clearly in the world of spirits, that evil spirits who love nothing but their own and obstinately insist that they live from themselves were convinced by sensible experience and were forced to confess that they did not live from themselves. For a number of years I have been permitted in an especial manner to know how the case is with what is man's own, and it has been granted to me to perceive clearly that I could think nothing from myself, but that every idea of thought flows in, and sometimes I could perceive how and whence it flowed in. The man who supposes that he lives from himself is therefore in what is false, and by believing that he lives from himself appropriates to himself everything evil and false, which he would never do if his belief were in accordance with the real truth of the case. And continuing on in the Arcana Celestia number 154. Nothing evil and false is ever possible which is not man's own, and from man's own, for the own of man is evil itself, and consequently man is nothing but evil and falsity. So if man is nothing but evil and falsity, there is nothing in him or able to be produced by him that can raise him out of that state. Without outside help, it is impossible for the sense of self born of the loves of self in the world to find its way out of the hell it is in. This state is dire, and the natural man is totally unaware of the predicament it is in. He is unaware of the abject terror of the situation. Salvation is only possible through the rebirth into a new sense of self. It needs to be born from above, from what is higher. But for that to happen, what is higher has to be able to penetrate into the dark, chaotic void of the unregenerate mind. There is a need for a ladder that connects heaven and earth so that higher spiritual things might be able to exert their influence to birth a new heavenly sense of self. This rebirth from what is higher takes place through instruction in spiritual things. The ladder that sets up a link between heaven and earth, upon which the angels of God can be seen ascending and descending, is formed from the teachings offered through the sacred texts of divine revelation. For, as has already been pointed out, the unregenerate natural mind is incapable of generating what's needed to extract our sense of self from its identification with the evils and falsities that form the basis for our life. So we have this statement from the Lord in the Gospels that no one has ascended into heaven except the one descending from out of the midst of heaven, the Son of Man who is existing within the midst of heaven. That's John 3, verse 13. If you recall, by the Son of Man is meant the Word, or more specifically, our understanding of the Word. The Word, or Logos, is that one that has descended from out of the midst of heaven, and having done so, is the only one that is able to ascend back into the midst of heaven. Of course, spiritually speaking, the Logos is continually descending and ascending from out of and into the midst of heaven. From a logopraxis perspective, the sacred scriptures and the heavenly doctrines are the Logos, or Word, in a form accessible to us as sacred texts. The Word itself is what conjoins interior, or the heavenly, and the exterior, or earthly levels of the mind when applied to life. The Logos descends and clothes itself with the ideas found within heavenly and earthly states of consciousness that form the human mind. The understanding of the Word a person has is called the Son of Man. It is specifically the doctrine or spiritual teachings drawn from the Word, the Logos, that relate to the matters of redemption, salvation, reformation, and regeneration. And you can see that in Doctrine of the Lord, number 22. It is doctrine or the Logos that opens the human mind to what is higher, and so is able to elevate the sense of self out of its identification with evil and falsity into what is good and true. The Lord is doctrine itself, and this doctrine, when accommodated to angelic and human capacities, is the ladder set up upon the earth, having its head in the heavens. As we know, the Word, as it descends through the heavens, as it comes forth into angelic awareness, clothes itself with what is in their minds, and so in this way the Word is adapted to each degree of angelic perception. Then when it descends or is projected more exteriorly into natural human minds, it is clothed with those natural states of mind found there so as to be adapted to the level of what is of the earth, to be finally ultimated in the form of sacred texts. Each level of adaptation serves as a rung on the ladder, providing truths that can lift the mind from its sensual base into ever-increasing degrees of spiritual perception. Upon these rungs, as a support, angels are said to ascend and descend. In the Apocalypse Revealed, it states that angels, in an abstract sense, signify divine truths from the Lord. Now these angels that are seen ascending and descending upon the Son of Man when heaven is open, offer a symbolic image of the process by which the spiritual mind, which is called heaven, is opened. Angels represent interior truths or an understanding of the word in terms of its application to psychological states or the life of the mind. It is this understanding that makes possible the regeneration of the human mind. They are said to be ascending and descending on the Son of Man because the Son of Man is the word that contains these interior truths that can elevate the mind or our sense of self from out of an earthly or natural state into a spiritual or heavenly state. In the work The Doctrine of the Lord, number 28, it states that the Son of Man signifies the Lord in respect to the word was the reason why the prophets were also called sons of man. The reason why the prophets were called sons of man was that they represented the Lord in respect to the word and consequently signified the doctrine of the church from the word. In heaven, nothing else is understood by prophets, as mentioned in the word. For the spiritual signification of prophet, as well as of son of man, is the doctrine of the church from the word, and when predicated of the Lord, prophet means the word itself. The ascending angels speak to the application of truths to the life of the mind in an effort to identify evils and falsities, so that they can be removed from the center of the mind to its periphery. The descending angels speak to those truths that flow forth from good after ascending truths have been integrated into the life, giving birth to a new sense of self in which the Lord alone is acknowledged to be the only life, and where the feeling of life in oneself is seen to be the appearance that it is. To be in the life of this state of acknowledgement is what is meant by being born again or born from above. Amen.